And secondly, we decided not to take a lot of time up telling you about the person, so we have a handout that has all of the bios. So please read that. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. And I appreciate Reed's optimism. My role this morning is Cassandra.
Tom, can you put the microphone on?
Oh, yeah, sure. I always forget about microphones. I just try to talk loud. I've worked over the last 40 years. Is this close enough? Okay, maybe it'll work that way. I've worked over the last 40 years as a tribal attorney with a number of pueblos, including pueblos in the middle Rio Grande. And I recall shortly after I moved to Albuquerque in 1971, opening the Albuquerque Journal one morning to see, I think, the journal's first use of color in the paper, and that was a blue band all the way across the top of the front page with that headlined the new USGS report contending that Albuquerque was sitting on a reservoir of fresh water the size of Lake Superior. The USGS has since recanted, but the incident highlights the unwarranted optimism about our water supply, I think. I want to share some of the thinking I've developed over the years, but I also caution that the Rio Grande is an extremely complex system, and there are any number of details that I don't have time to discuss today that may make some of my contentions arguable. There's lots and lots of room for argument here, as we all know. I've learned a lot about the river over the years, mainly from the Pueblo perspective, where we always worry about the Pueblo's prior and paramount water rights. This conference grows out of, or this title of this conference grows out of, I think, several conversations I had with the late esteemed hydrologist, Dr. Frank Titus. Frank and I talked about someday putting together what we colorfully called a doomsday conference, to tell it like it is about the river. I go to a certain number of continuing legal education programs about the Rio Grande and New Mexico water law, and there are always people there from various federal and state agencies, and to hear them tell it, everything is really working fine, or pretty much. The title of today's conference, Managing the River to Failure, is a bit more politic, but yes, we wanted to get your attention. Just for fun, I want to share a Pueblo view that I heard many years ago when I was having lunch with the Santo Domingo Pueblo Council in Bernalillo, and a councilman turned to me and asked with all sincerity, "Tom, is there anything we can do about Albuquerque?" I sympathized with his concerns, but I'm afraid my answer disappointed him. So we start with the understanding that the Rio Grande has been over-appropriated since the late 19th century. There's no more water. Any new use ultimately requires cessation of an existing use. And here's a quick review of some of the bad water management policies that the OSE has adopted. I start with the most famous New Mexico state engineer, Steve Reynolds, who served in that office for 35 years, from 1955 to 1990. Reynolds established policies that favor municipalities and development at the expense of senior water rights, which, as Reed noted and Elaine noted, are explicitly protected by the New Mexico Constitution. Reynolds viewed groundwater as a mineable resource, like copper or oil and gas, which should be mined and used for the economic benefit of the state. However, it's mostly fossil water that accumulated during the Pleistocene, and it's just as irreplaceable as an oil and gas field. That policy creates a big problem where there's a hydrologic connection between the groundwater and the river, as there is along the Rio Grande. It's also a problem because large water supplies are not as easy to move around as other commodities. Copper can be shipped in from anywhere in the world. However, water from outside New Mexico is unlikely to ever be available. Although many would like to believe New Mexico has enough water for unlimited population growth and development, it doesn't. It's unwise to create a large population dependent on an essential, depleting, and irreplaceable resource. And as has been noted several times already this morning, we're mining approximately 55,000 acre-feet of groundwater in the Middle Rio Grande Basin annually. It's obvious to reasonable people that this can't go on forever. Then there's the problem of downstream to upstream transfers of the point of diversion. The OSC allows this. There's a continuous flow of applications for these transfers for new uses and developments in the Middle Rio Grande and around Santa Fe. And in the law firm that I was with, we tracked those on a regular basis so that we would know what's happening. It's obvious that downstream to upstream transfers diminish flows in the river. The OSC's policy seems to be that as long as those transfers don't seem to affect diversions, of which there are only 5 in the Middle Rio Grande, it's not a problem. I don't believe the OSC is even keeping track of the cumulative volume of these transfers. There's also the problem of no priority administration. Article 16 of the New Mexico Constitution provides that priority of appropriation shall give the better right. There's no official policy statement that the OSC will not enforce priority, but that nonetheless is the unstated policy. The OSC doesn't even have the budget or the ability to enforce priorities. The lack of priority administration means that senior priorities are meaningless, and more recently granted groundwater pumping permits and domestic wells will share priority with the most senior rights, including the Pueblo Prior and Paramount rights. This policy violates the New Mexico Constitution. Then there's the problem of groundwater pumping permits. According to the ISC, there are approximately 230,000 acre-feet per year of post-basin pumping rights permitted in the Middle Rio Grande. The Albuquerque-Bernalillo County Water Utility Authority has permits to pump 165,000 acre-feet per year on both sides of the river. Rio Rancho has a permit for 25,000 acre-feet per year, of which they pump about 12,000. Intel pumps approximately 3,000. The proposed Facebook data center in Los Lunas will be seeking a substantial cooling water supply, which is to come out of unused pumping allowed by the Los Lunas well permit. The OSC requires these pumpers to offset depletions of river flows caused by their pumping by purchasing and retiring senior surface rights to meet the river depletions, to make the river whole. But the pumpers aren't required to purchase and retire the offsetting rights until the OSC calculates that the groundwater depletions have reached the river. This amounts to a huge public loan to these pumpers. How can we be sure they'll be able to repay these loans? We have no security. There aren't enough early priority rights that can be acquired to offset the depletions these overhanging pumping permits will ultimately cause in the river. But the OSC isn't counting. Is there any limit on how much pumping OSC will ultimately permit on this basis? What happens when sufficient offsetting surface rights can't be acquired? As Elaine said earlier, there are about 50,000 to 65,000 acres of irrigated lands in the Conservancy District, of which almost 9,000 are Pueblo and can't be retired. So if enough land is retired to satisfy those overhanging rights, there won't be any irrigated land except the Pueblo land. And how good are the models used to determine when groundwater pumping will result in depletions of the river? Even good models never accurately reflect reality. And then there's the hole in the river. It's estimated that approximately 200 CFS disappears into the Rio Grande riverbed between the Central Avenue gauge and the Isleta gauge. This may be something around 50,000 acre-feet annually. There are additional substantial losses from ditches and drains. Where does this water go? The answer is it goes into cones of depression from permitted pumping on both sides of the river. The problem is that for various reasons, there is no requirement to retire surface rights to make up for this loss of river flow. This loss impairs senior rights that are served by the Isleta diversion. Well, what does managing the river to failure look like? For starters, the river runs dry. We're going to have an ever more lengthy dry riverbed in the summer for ever longer periods along the middle Rio Grande. Endangered species are obviously impacted, including the ability to meet ESA requirements. Again, there's direct impairment of senior rights as a result of water shortages and the failure to impose priority administration. Non-Indian irrigation in the Conservancy District has ended in August in some recent years because of water shortages. This is going to occur more frequently. The cones of depression in the vicinity of the river caused by groundwater pumping are even now adversely affecting surface deliveries. There's a reduction of irrigation efficiency as a result of low heads in the ditches and too little water flowing into the fields, slowly into the fields. There's decreased agricultural productivity as a result of drought-stressed crops. There's an inability to grow some food crops, particularly vegetables, due to insufficient irrigation water. There's land subsidence due to groundwater depletion. This can result in large property losses for landowners. Irrigated agriculture becomes less viable and ultimately results in the loss of the green belt if all of those acres of irrigation are retired to meet the groundwater pumping depletions. We'll eventually lose the ditches and the recreational opportunities they afford. Wildlife habitat outside the levees will be lost. We will eventually lose the traditional land-based cultures, agricultural societies along the river, including the Pueblos and the Hispanic culture. What are the potential crises? What are the potential crisis triggering events? One is the adjudication of the Upper Rio Grande. This is considered by some informed observers to be inevitable and by others to be impossible. It's long been avoided because it would be the single largest court proceeding in New Mexico history, if not U.S. history, aside from very large class actions, with thousands of named parties. It will have to include all the water users and claimants from Elephant Butte to the Colorado border and all the unadjudicated tributaries. It will take decades to complete. The Amick case began in 1966 and isn't over yet. It's going to be very expensive. The New Mexico legislature has never been willing to fund such a mammoth undertaking. Failing to adjudicate allows business as usual with no accountability to the senior rights holders. But any one unhappy irrigator with an early priority may trigger the adjudication by initiating a priority call. Any of the Pueblos or the U.S. could file suit to initiate the adjudication. The Pueblos might also bring a lawsuit to enjoin the OSE from managing the river so as to compromise their prior and paramount water rights. This could stop the present Ponzi scheme of handing out pumping permits not offset by real water rights. It could also crash the system and bring about wholesale reform. I have advocated this in meeting with the six Middle Rio Grande Pueblos. Then there's the ESA. If ESA requirements are not met, the environmental community will surely litigate to enforce them. The ESA requirements will trump senior rights in the Conservancy District and beyond. Then there's the Texas v. New Mexico and Colorado lawsuit. In January 2013, Texas sued New Mexico and Colorado in the U.S. Supreme Court, asserting that compact deliveries to Texas are shorted by surface and groundwater diversions below Elephant Butte that are allowed by the OSE. The remedy Texas seeks is that the court command New Mexico, its officers, citizens, and political subdivisions, and I'm quoting from the complaint, to deliver the waters of the Rio Grande in accordance with the provisions of the Compact and the Rio Grande Project Act. To the extent the court might require delivery of more water from northern New Mexico to Elephant Butte to meet New Mexico's compact obligations, or that the ISC and the OSE choose that as part of the remedy, we have a big problem because we have no more water to deliver. The Supreme Court appointed a special master who recently denied New Mexico's motion to dismiss. If Texas is successful, it could mean all of us are on the hook to pay in water and money for the OSC's failure to properly manage the lower Rio Grande. I contend the OSC is managing the Rio Grande in such a fashion as to virtually guarantee future problems that will be extremely difficult to resolve, if not catastrophic. There's a certain corruption in the efforts of the OSC, the ISC, and the BOR to manipulate the Rio Grande system and the law to provide additional water for municipal and industrial development and still meet compact obligations. This is at the expense of senior water rights, the ecological integrity of the river, and ultimately the Pueblos. The Albuquerque Bernalillo County Water Utility Authority says it can support 1 million people using 150 gallons per day per capita in perpetuity if river flows are available in sufficient quantity. That is to say, if flows don't diminish. However, flows are diminishing. And climate models predict that flows will continue to diminish for the foreseeable future. It doesn't all add up, and it spells big trouble for the future. Thank you. I don't know whether we have time for questions.
9 minutes.
9 minutes for questions. Yes, sir.
I'm a hydrogeologist. I've been working just in the last 8 days with a landowner in the South Valley, and I'm starting to see the subsidence. You mentioned the water table in the South Valley, or between Isleta and just say west of Mountain View, south of Rio Bravo Boulevard, has dropped in the soil survey of 1914, the water table was right at the surface. Now it's about 25, 30 feet below. And this is, and I was just out in a field with a lady who flood irrigates 3 acres of alfalfa. And there are these, what the local Hispanics would call sotanos, or holes to, that the devil uses to drag little children into. But they're the size of twice the podium that you're sitting at, and about as deep. You drive a Volkswagen, small Volkswagen, into them. But that's one of the manifestations of land subsidence are these earth fissures, and besides the and when you flood irrigate, you can really, they're very effective recharge points. But they've just, this person's ability to irrigate and grow her alfalfa is just wiped out now. And these fields, they keep laser leveling and fill in the holes, and they're lacunas that fill, that bleed into subsurface fractures. And so it's just another, it's one of the manifestations of land subsidence. It's not just, it's localized in cracks and earth fissures and just holes. Very good for recharging.
And a very, very serious problem, because it renders fields unusable. You don't dare drive a tractor over them, or you may fall in a hole that hasn't yet manifested itself on the surface. Yes, sir.
You mentioned the Texas to New Mexico water suit and potential outcome. My understanding is the special master said the state engineer had a stunted view of the compact and its requirements. But I think the real point is I believe the compact provides a perfect dividing line between the Middle Rio Grande and the Lower Rio Grande for water, as long as we in the Middle Rio Grande comply. I don't think they can get our water if we're in compliance with the compact. Money's a different thing. If New Mexico loses, I think the state's on the hook for a huge amount of money.
Well, I'm well aware of the argument that as long as New Mexico delivers to Elephant Butte, that we can't be compelled to provide any more water from northern New Mexico. But that it can also be disputed.
Just one more.
Yes, sir.
Following on Jordan's comment, and you adumbrated this subject earlier, talk of the connection between surface water and groundwater, which is something that's been known for thousands of years. And Zane Spiegel did a big report on this for the state engineer's office. However, back in the mid-70s, I was approached by a guy named Charlie Crowder. His name, I think, has been brought up. Charlie wanted to drill some big gangbuster wells for a big development down in the south of Las Cruces. And he went to Steve Reynolds, and he said, Mr. Reynolds, do I need a permit for these wells? Bear in mind, at that time, that part of the state had not been brought under the administrative control of the state engineer's office. And Steve's response to him was, quote, Charlie, you drill as many wells as you want. We want to get that water before it gets to Texas, end quote. That was the intent of Reynolds. So I'm not so optimistic in the Texas suit against New Mexico.
Well, thank you for that history. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm curious about the connection between water usage and electricity generation and utility. Can you speak to sort of the size? Is that a big user? Do they have legal rights? Where do they get their water from? How is that protected? Because coal-fired power plants, you know, consume a tremendous amount of water.
You know, I am not knowledgeable about that. Is there anybody here who can answer that question?
Well, they get, if you're talking about the San Juan generator, they're getting their water rights out of the San Juan River.
Do you have a sense of how big of a user they are relative?
That one plant uses 22,000 acre feet.
and is that about 15 or 20% of
no,
our
sorry,
state?
That's either.
Huh?
That's somebody said
today.
It's
that's less than a quarter of the 100.
Gas fired cars also use that water, and so they put these peaking plants around, and they're always having thousands of acre feet of water that they're accumulating too. But I think your question's right on, because the electrical generation for electricity is the fastest growing water user in the United States, and it's outstripping every other water use. Ag has been fairly flat for years, but the water use consumption for electrical generation is really going up because we're not getting as much out of hydro and nothing. We all have gadgets and devices in our electrical consumption is going up. So that nexus of power generation and water availability is a really important one. And PNM acquire a lot of their water rights through purchases of senior rights and those kinds of things. And it might be worth noting that the highway department owns a significant amount of senior rights through their condemnation actions for a low
Sure.
I think there's a connection between our synergy, at least between renewable energy sector and the work that's going on.
So not that many years ago, the rule of thumb figure, which is very variable depending on type of generation, was something like half a gallon of water per kilowatt hour.
The Union of Concerned Scientists gives an analogy. They basically say, consider the water flow over the Niagara in a minute, triple it, and that's the amount of water that's used by the coal-fired power plants nationally in a minute. So that gives a pretty good perspective.
It's a bunch.
Huh?
It's a bunch.
That's how I see it. So I mean, to say that maybe it's not a big consumer would surprise me quite a bit, right? And the new generation that's sort of coming online nationally tends to be on the renewable side, which is essentially zero water use. I just think that there maybe to put a little bright spot in the end of the train wreck here, that maybe there's some opportunity.
I think we can take one more question.
Sure. I don't know if this is a state secret, and if so, you can keep it to yourself. But why, if you have advocated and have none of the populace sued to enforce priority administration?
That's a question I really can't answer. Let's just say that they weren't prepared to do that at the time.
All right, well, thank you. And now we have a break, I believe.
Okay, guys. 15 minutes, there are more bagels out front. Restrooms are about 50 yards down that way into your right. We don't check birth certificates.
I'm going to go for a model.